Good morning. Happy Friday. Today we're going to be getting the lowdown on what's happening these days with our local 4-H groom from Kate Schauberg and Libby Eufemio, and what's happening these days out at the Kodiak Fairgrounds from Sadie McCusker. If you have questions, 486-3181 or email us lowdown@kmxt.org and we'll try and get your question answered before the end of the show. And boy, we have a lot to talk about today as well. Kate, Libby, Sadie, welcome. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. You know, just sitting here for 10 minutes talking to you before we went on the air, I learned an enormous amount so far. So let's start with an introduction of each of you, tell you who you are and what your role is in regard to each of your associations, and then we'll go from there. Let's start.
This is Sadie McCusker here. I've been involved on the fair board for, this is my fifth year, and I am the president.
Hi, Kate.
Hey. So I'm Kate Schauberg. I work for the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service part-time. My job is to run the 4-H program here in Kodiak. I work with the leaders of the Kodiak 4-H Club to offer programming for our members ages 5 to 18. And then I also work to build partnerships with other community partners, organizations to further the outreach of 4-H here in Kodiak.
Great. Libby?
Hi, I'm Libby Eufemio, and I am currently president of the 4-H Leaders Council here in town. And I have three kids, all of whom are either former or current members of 4-H. And I'm a former 4-H'er myself from Fairbanks originally.
Great. So, in regards to early March, you know, what's a normal, what is your role normally in regard to the fairgrounds and what was going on at that time and what were you preparing for?
So typically by March, we're really focusing on the planning and organizing it takes to put on our annual Labor Day Fair and Rodeo. It really takes a full year to make that one event happen. One of the biggest, one of the most important factors of planning is to gather sponsors from our community that we heavily rely on, and we're so grateful for. I believe it was our March, it was either our February or March meeting where we had the discussion that we did not feel comfortable soliciting for sponsors from our vulnerable.
This is like the state fair in September?
Yes, Labor Day weekend.
So you're planning back in March for that to happen?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yes. We started, I mean, our annual meeting is in October, so it's after the fair, and that's when we do our board elections, and then we kind of just relax. We communicate, but we don't do a whole lot. As far as meeting and whatnot, until January is when we really get going. But as we all know, by January of 2020, we were seeing that this year was not playing out normal. So yeah, in March, we were really noticing that we are going to have some complications with collecting sponsorships, even though Kodiak itself and even Alaska wasn't really feeling the economical effects yet.
Yeah.
But business owners were preparing for it, I believe.
So, wait, okay, you got the fairgrounds out there, which is a borough property your group has a lease for, and is your sole function then to deal with the state fair, or that's just your biggest event? There's all kinds of other things happening, right?
So in our mission, one of the biggest importance of our mission is to put on a state fair and rodeo, an annual fair and rodeo. Other missions are to provide a community gathering location, so that's where we try to host other organizations like 4-H or the Lions Club. KIRA, the Kodiak Island Racing Association, is part of our locale. But then we also are supposed to, part of our mission is to provide livestock for the community to enjoy. So But we tend to go beyond that, and we really enjoy just having the community a part of the fairgrounds. And
so you got the fairgrounds. You manage the fairgrounds facility out there, which is horses, the track. What else? That's pretty much it, right?
That covered space.
The what?
The covered space for activities, outdoor concerts.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the Lions Club pole barn.
The pole barn.
So that definitely is a big asset.
But things are happening out there all year, right?
Typically a lot more so than
well, this year. You know, the little, weren't you involved like last year? I noticed when the farmer's market was going for the last 4 or 5 years every Saturday, and then it got changed and you did a thing on Friday nights, right?
Yes. So once the farmer's market moved to the Baptist Mission, we really missed having the community out there on a regular basis and also providing space for vendors, an opportunity for vendors to work with the community. We started the Friday Flings, and that was, it's been slow, but really fun.
Yeah. So that sort of, all that planning then went by the wayside in March. You pretty much, your focus is on what are we going to do at the state fair, man? That's a huge thing. But you got the Friday events. I noticed that there's this pole barn thing happening tomorrow, right?
Yeah, that's the Lions Club is putting that together. So we're not really involved. It's more we're just providing the space for that.
Okay. But your big focus is, here's the state fair. That's a huge thing for a lot of the gardeners and a lot of the exhibitors and a lot of the 4-H kids that are doing that thing in September, and you've already decided you can't do it.
Correct. Yeah. We came to that decision after multiple meetings with the Association of Alaska State Fairs. I might have butchered the name, but it's something okay. along those lines.
We're down here in Kodiak.
Yeah. So it essentially, every state fair throughout this Alaska has conversated about the situation and the logistics of putting on a fair that, I mean, we see about maybe 1,000 plus people a day during our fair. Socially distancing, near impossible in our buildings. Our outside facility isn't set up right now to put on the fair that we all know and have grown to expect. It was a very, very difficult decision to make. It was something we didn't want to do, but we were trying to protect the future of the fairgrounds, because we could put in a lot of money to put on this event and then be shut down or not get the attendance we need to recover the financial investment. So we decided that it'll be better for our community, because we won't be going around begging our local businesses for money to put on, I hate to say it, but a non-essential event. And we are really going to try to focus on ways we can provide space for the community to gather and support small vendors and support the horse community as far as competitions and practices.
So the Fairgrounds Group is a nonprofit, right?
Correct.
And you're in the process of trying to switch it over to be a 501c3. For long-term financial stability. So how does somebody get involved in being on the Fairgrounds board?
So we have meetings every second Tuesday of the month. We have a Facebook page, Kodiak Rodeo and State Fairgrounds, Facebook page is Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair. And then we also have a website, KodiakRodeoStateFair.com. But there's multiple ways to reach out to us if you are looking to get involved. We are all volunteers, and we really rely on even non-board member volunteers to make things happen.
To do it, So is it traditionally, has it been like the horse community, the gardeners, the racers? I mean, who gets involved in helping with fairground activities?
The horse community is a huge part of our volunteer workforce because they really rely on the fairgrounds. Not only the horse boarders, but even the people that haul in to ride there and compete in our competitions and our play days. So, but we reach out to all sorts of people for help, even local contractors and youth organizations for different projects. And
like 4-H.
Like
4-H, yeah. I was going to go right into that. I have to have one more question for you first. because of the COVID closures, though, are you, and your nonprofit status, are you eligible for any kind of funding to help you offset your losses?
We are actually working on our application for the grant that just became available through
the city grant.
Yeah, so we're working on that application and hopefully we qualify.
So what are we talking about in terms of losses? I mean, what do you normally project out how much money this brings in for you and brings in for the whole community when you put on the state fair?
I mean, the numbers are kind of, it's hard to predict as far as what the vendors are bringing in, but I know that between sponsorships and our gate, it's a good chunk of money, $20,000 plus. Thankfully, we get a lot of our funding through the horse boarding, and so we are putting a lot of focus, and we have been for years, not just because of this situation, but on improving our facility for horse boarding to make it more of an appeal, to hopefully fill every pasture like used to be in the old days. So our horse boarding is a big part of our financial stability. But this does, I know it does impact the vendors that rely on the fair.
So do you have paid employees by chance?
Our caretaker is essentially paid. So we do a trade with him. He gets to board his horses there.
Great deal.
Trade for work, but he's worth more than that.
Yeah. I've known many of those caretaker types. So most of the revenue that you have coming in during the course of the year then goes into repairs and for lease? Is that about it?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
The money that you come in from events and from doing what you do and doing the state fair, that goes back into the facility and goes to the borough to pay for lease payments?
Yeah, thankfully the lease isn't too difficult for us to cover.
Yeah.
But yes, the money that we make, we try really hard to put into improving the facility. Unfortunately, the improvements we need they exceed our annual income by a little bit, which is why it's so important for us to get this nonprofit C3 status so we can have access to grants that are out there for facilities like ours.
Well, how do you work with the 4-H? How has that partnership been developed?
4-H is amazing. I couldn't honestly imagine the fairgrounds without them. They're going to talk more about their programs, but the therapeutic riding is one thing that happens kind of throughout the summer, and that's just something that I personally love to see out there. It's such a great program. Just such a positive program for the fairgrounds. But then, I mean, the fair itself wouldn't be the same without them. They have such a huge part of it. Everything from exhibits, pony rides, petting zoo, their kids participating in events, and they're a huge presence.
So when you're making your decision, I imagine probably some of the people that are on your board are 4-H people in the first place. Is there a lot of cooperation between the two of organizations here when you're deciding we're going to have to kick the fair down the road for a while?
Yeah, yeah. So what we decided as leaders at 4-H, we had to go under the rules, the mandates that we get from our higher-ups in the university system about meeting and what we're allowed to do. And we had a leaders meeting where we decided that for the foreseeable future, we would not be participating in any kind of face-to-face events, just for the protection of our kids and their parents. And so we came to that decision, and that meant not participating in FAIR if FAIR was going to happen. And so then we communicated to the FAIR board that that was our decision.
But at the same time, I just want to give a shout out to the FAIR board. When we communicated that message at one of their meetings, they were very open to the idea of working with us to provide a virtual FAIR opportunity for our 4-H kids. So that's something that we're kind of brainstorming right now, but we just don't want to have our 4-H members have nothing to look forward to at the end of the year where they get to show off the projects they've been working on. So we're trying to be creative and come up with some kind of virtual opportunity for showing off what they've done and even getting some feedback and ribbons and that type of thing. So I really appreciate the open communication with the FAIR board.
Okay, we gave Sadie an opportunity to talk at length about her her organization and how they're composed, and you just said something that, you know, triggered something in my head, which was, in all these years of dealing with 4-H with my kids and the neighborhood kids, and the university component has never come to the forefront for me. I knew that there was cooperative extension, but I didn't know how that was associated. So now, can you explain to me how the university is involved in the local 4-H group?
So I am employed by UAF Cooperative Extension Service. And so on a daily basis, I am communicating with the other people who run Alaska 4-H programming all over the state. And so those are colleagues of mine. I am responsible for kind of being that middle person between Alaska 4-H and the Kodiak 4-H programming.
So what is 4-H? I mean, why is cooperative extension involved with 4-H?
4-H is Learn by Doing. We're run by the UAF as one of the partners, Cooperative Extension Service. And it's because of the land grant university that it's part of their mission to offer that programming.
So, excuse me, 4-H exists throughout the United States, right?
Yep. And it's all through those land grant universities. And so in each state at the land grant universities, they offer 4-H programming. And then it goes down through counties and districts to offer the direct programming.
So without the university component, there would not be a 4-H? And I mean, is there a way for us to do it locally without?
Not under that.
Not under the way it's
umbrella, no.
And you're a university employee who have been in the news for the last 3 days, right?
Yeah, months.
Months, yeah, months.
Yeah.
So you're a professor.
No. No, I'm not faculty. I'm just a part-time staff.
Part-time staff.
Yep.
So how do you work? Libby, you work at the local level, though. You actually are a UAA employee.
Yes, right.
A Kodiak College employee.
We all wear many hats in this community, I think.
But that, your work at the local college doesn't have anything to do with 4-H, does it?
Correct, yeah.
No. Other than you can sit there and recruit people to come in and help.
Yes, that's true. Yep. No. So at the college, I run the Aleutic Studies program, and I teach anthropology and Alaska Native Studies. And then in my other life, my free time or whatever, I'm president of Kodiak 4-H, and so we have a leaders council, and Kate is our wonderful programs coordinator. And it's important. I think it's a great time to mention that. A very small investment in one part-time position impacts so many hundreds of people in our community. Kate and all her hard work have allowed us to generate thousands of volunteer hours where it's not just parents, but it's people in the community who are volunteering to lead groups or participate or help us in some way. And so we have, every year, we have thousands of volunteer hours that go into all the things that we do. And so this is a good time, I think, to talk about all the different programs that we have going on right now for kids in 4-H. So we have a whole list of activities, and these are active groups. We have a shooting sports group that focuses on, we've done archery, rifle, right? The other ones that we haven't done yet are shotgun, and I can't remember the fourth one.
Pistol.
But these are in partnerships with lots of other organizations. So, for example, the shooting sports, we partner with KISA, right? The Kodiak Island Shooting Association. Yeah. We have veterinary science group. And so we partner with the local Dr. Yakabuchi at Kodiak Vet Clinic to offer all sorts of really interesting hands-on learning about veterinary science. We have a small animals group that was really active, and that's led by Kelly Foreman at the Baptist Mission. And so we have access to all the wonderful things they're doing there, including the goat milking, the whole dairy that they have going on there. We have a gardening group that's very active right now. We have community garden beds that the 4-H kids are working at in town and at the fairgrounds. That's a nice partnership that's happening right now with some 4-H'ers. They're under Shanna.
I don't know how to pronounce it. Theobald?
Theobald, yeah. Dr. Shanna Theobald is our gardening and healthy living leader. And they're going to be constructing some new garden beds out at the fairgrounds, too, right, for community gardens.
Yes.
We have a dog obedience classes. We have, of course, all the horse that you know so well, Mike, from your past experience, horse lovers and horse groups. We have a very active baking group, learning how learning how to bake everything from, you know, sourdough bread to pretzels to muffins. We have a sewing group that quilting and sewing. It's been a regular group for a long time. In fact, my daughter made my mask that I'm wearing right now. And that leads me to think about how we've participated in the mask-making effort here in town. Maybe Kate could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we had five or six families that contributed to the mask-making effort, and we made just over 50 masks. We had a little tote set up at the vet clinic where we would put the masks in, and then families that we contacted would be able to come and pick them up. So that was a great community service, which is one of our mission of our mission.
Yeah, that's a big part of 4-H is community service. And I should mention, we also have a photography group that has been meeting online via Zoom. And is there anything else that I missed? Arts and crafts. Yeah, very active arts and crafts. And then, of course, teen leaders. We have a teen group, or have had in the past, a lot of opportunities for teens. So we have a lot going on, even at this time.
Even at this time.
I guess to clarify, so those groups are not all meeting now due to COVID.
Yeah.
No. A lot of those groups had to kind of stop because they couldn't function under the mandates that the university set. So we aren't doing any face-to-face programming. And obviously things like shooting sports and baking are hard to do via Zoom. And so the only projects that are meeting currently via Zoom are the gardening group and the photography group. Mm-hmm. We are having some all-member meetings over Zoom, but it also feels a little bit like our kids are a little bit Zoomed out.
All right, so take me back a little bit here. You are a part-time employee of UAF, and are you a cooperative extension agent?
I am not. They got rid of the Cooperative Extension Service agent here in Kodiak several years ago, over five, because that's how long I've been employed. And so I am not an agent. I'm just the 4-H staff program coordinator.
4-H staff coordinator. Mm-hmm. So the relationship, what came first? You know, the 4-H, the fairgrounds, the cooperative extensions? I mean, how did that whole thing, you know? I mean,
it's kind of a symbiotic relationship. I'm not really sure. I know that 4-H has been in Kodiak for 46 years, and that started with Marie Rice, our famous Marie Rice, and Barbara Zimmerman. Those two ladies were like the beginnings of 4-H here in Kodiak. But we have existed here for 46 years, which is a really long time.
And just to say, Marie Rice is only not currently a leader because she moved off island. Barbara Zimmerman is still a current leader, and Marie Rice is actually being awarded with the National 4-H Hall of Fame.
Sweet.
She will be accepted into the class of 2020 this fall, and we are very proud of that. We wouldn't be here without Marie Rice and Barbara Zimmerman.
Exactly.
So, it would be really interesting to trace the history there of the fairgrounds and the development of 4-H and whether they came about at the same time, and then how the university got involved. And
those two ladies would have the answers to those questions.
Okay, we'll go on to that with another thing. So you sounds like you're super busy all year round, and you got 20 people that are regular adult leaders to groups.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, 15, 20, 30 different activities that different kids could get involved. This is targeted at, young kids, right?
Well, we have a Clover Buds, which is the very youngest age group, from ages 5 to 8. And then a 9 and up, they can participate in all the sports, or shooting sports, or all the other activities that we have up until the age of 18. Right? Is that the, mm-hmm. the top? And then, but the nice thing about 4-H is it's a real family organization. So you can come as a family with kids who are younger than 5, babies, toddlers, or kids who are, who've aged out of the system and want to come back and help. And that happens all the time. I just like it because it's so inclusive for all age groups. It makes it easy for families to just do things together.
So somebody's new to town and they come in and they want to get their kids involved and get their family involved in activities. Where do they go and how do they get involved?
So we have a website, alaska4h.org/Kodiak, that has all the information about membership. We have a Facebook page, Kodiak 4-H. I would give the phone number, but I'm just moving offices and I can't get into the building anyway, so that's not a good way to get me. But kodiak4h@gmail.com is the email address, and it's $25 dues for a year, and so the member pays that $25, and then they can participate in any of those projects that Libby just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to do. There traditionally we have a lot of stuff going on, and I think the important thing that we're trying to keep going, even though we can't meet with kids anymore, is we're trying to keep up the main thing about 4-H is education, is learning, learn by doing. And so we have had some interesting things going on since the COVID-19 pandemic started that to try to keep people involved, keep kids going. And maybe, Kate, you could talk a little bit about our the things that we've been doing since that whole thing started.
Yeah, so when we made the decision that we weren't doing face-to-face programming, we wanted a way to still reach our kids. And we did notice that a lot of the education was being focused on screen. And so we started a blog that we did for 9 weeks that were just daily activities that kids could do at home with their families with limited supplies that you could find around your house that were off screen. And so they would just look at the activity and then go and do it with their siblings or their parents. We had them submit pictures of themselves doing the activities, and then we had a daily drawing that would support a local business here. So we ended up putting about $500 back into local organizations in terms of gift cards or things like that that the kids could be rewarded with for doing those activities. We also we started this at-home kit idea with the Windowsill Garden Project. That was where we compiled a kit, and so it had soil and seeds for growing in a windowsill garden. We sent those out to over 90 families, some in the rural villages. So there were participants from 4 of the rural villages here on the archipelago. And then we partnered with St. Mary's to deliver some to a classroom there, and then some 4-H families were also participants of that. And that was a big success. We found that families really liked having that kit to have instructions and what to do. And then, so we followed that up with our pancake breakfast kit. And that was, I mean, I think when you think about 4-H, yeah, we have these projects for our members. We have about 100 members right now, but I think the reach is a lot further with our community events that we plan each year, like the pancake breakfast.
Yeah,
and
normally
the
we have a pancake breakfast
for Crabfest. Yeah,
at Crabfest. Yeah, and that's a tradition that's been going on for how many years? Like 36 or
this
something.
This is our 33rd year.
33 years, and so this year we couldn't do that for the public, and so Kate put together these great sourdough kits that we could all make our own sourdough pancakes at home and then share some of that starter with somebody else.
Really?
Yeah.
So is that still going on?
So they all the families got a 4-H apron and the sourdough. They made it on Memorial Day weekend, which is when Crab Fest usually was, and our pancake breakfast usually happens at the Elks. And they all sent in pictures, and we compiled those pictures and shared it out on social media and just said, you know, we miss everybody, and next year we'll see you at the real deal.
The real deal.
Yep.
So in a normal year, when you guys are trying to figure out, it sounds like you have a lot of leaders that sort of run the various different activities that the kids can get involved in. So, man, it had to be a mad scramble in March when you're deciding each one of those we're going to have to try and think of something else. But normally when you're trying to put together a year, how do the adults move through the system to decide that they want to get involved to teach a particular thing, or, you know, to make course offerings or...
Right. So if you have something you're passionate about that you want to share with youth, any particular skill that you have, then hopefully Kate will meet with you and find out, you know, what you'd like to teach. And that's how we get all of our leaders, pretty much. Somebody who just has a passion for photography or baking or whatever, vet science. And it's a pretty easy process. At least it was in the past for us to get somebody going. You know, they have to go through a certain background check and be vetted. But then we have some resources. 4-H is wonderful for a whole bunch of pre-printed packets on any topic you can imagine. And so we are able to support that volunteer with that kind of paperwork or things, and then they just take off and we set up meetings. And
so Libby is, and you guys are talking about our project leaders. And so we wouldn't be what we are without our project leaders, without our volunteer leaders. But it doesn't have to be that you're wanting to invest all of that time to meet with kids, you know, over time with a project passion. We have so many volunteers in our community that aren't vetted official 4-H volunteers. We are just coordinating a series for the summer that will happen on Tuesdays. We're calling it Walk and Talk Tuesdays. So this will be a Facebook Live event, 1:30 on Tuesdays, where I'll be going around and touring different gardens that community members have. Judy Kidder will be showing off her honeybees. Gayla Peterson is going to be showing us how to harvest wild edibles on the beach. So that's something that we have coming up, and again, wouldn't happen without volunteers. So it's really easy to volunteer for 4-H in multiple capacities. Cool.
Well, I got to think it started out as a couple of core activities, you know, and then gradually you're adding these things. I want to teach photography. I want to do this. And you get to showcase it all out at the state fair for a lot of times. But a lot of these things are, I never heard about the pancake breakfast kit or the garden in the box thing. So, you know, when the COVID starts to close things down, what do you internally then have to do with all these leaders in the individual activities to say, we need to rein this in, and we need to stop the shooting classes, and we need to stop the photography classes? Or how do you then turn that into, okay, if we can't do things the way we're doing them now, what can we do? It sounds like a lot of work.
Well, we have our monthly leader meetings. And all these leaders are great, wonderful people that are creative and have awesome ideas. And so we get together and we just have conversations about
via Zoom.
Yeah, via Zoom, about what we're going to do. And sometimes it's, well, we can't. We can't do that right now. But other times it's, yes, we can, but in a different way. And so I think it's just that collaboration and open-mindedness and understanding that some of this is from the university. Like, we cannot meet over 10 people at a time, period. And so... Right. Some is our decision making, and some is just communicating directive down from UAF.
So where's these ideas coming out for what you're doing right now, though? I mean, is that in the leader group?
Yeah, that's just me working with leaders and coming up with ideas. Shanna is going to be doing a potato in a bag kit coming up. So we're trying to do these at-home kits once a month. A lot of them are just for members right now, but I think our July or August kit, we're thinking about doing another one out to the wider audience, like that windowsill garden was open to any youth that wanted it. And so I think, again, later in the summer, we'll do another one that's maybe trying to get a project for the virtual fair. Who knows?
So the potato in a bag is a grow a potato. Right? So we're trying to focus on skills that are really in the forefront right now, right? We have to think about... it's important for all kids and most people, you know, to learn, where does your food come from? How do you grow your own food? How do you process your own food? How do you make your own bread? So that's one of the really important things, I think, that is that's key about 4-H.
So you buy the potatoes and you leave them in the cupboard for a while, and then they get those long stringy things coming out, and then you plant them, right? So
I think our kit's a little more than that. But
maybe we should get you recruited for making our directions.
I do it all the time. So what other kind of fun things are? I mean, you know, you're making adjustments.
Right.
What are you guys doing at the fairgrounds? It's not just shut down. You got the pole thing happening on Saturday.
Yeah, the Lions are putting on a, I think it's like a little flea market this Saturday. I don't have the details, but you reach out to any Lions member. There's quite a handful of them here in the community. just like every volunteer organization, they're suffering because of the current situation.
Yeah, but I mean, but you guys rent the place out, right? I mean,
we do. Like, we had multiple weddings planned for this year, but they have all rescheduled.
Oh, really?
So we did have a fisherman rent out our exhibit hall, working on his net, which was really helpful income for us. But we are working hard at planning activities for our community this summer, and we are still working on our mitigation plan because we do want to make sure everybody involved is safe, and we are doing it to the best of our ability. But the number one focus so far is what we call play days. It's to support our horse community. Play days are, some people are referring to them as mini rodeos, which kind of a controversial term in the horse world right now, but
it's, mini rodeos.
Yeah, what it's going to look like so far, from my understanding, is anybody who rides horses can come and participate. There's a small event fee, and it's starting mid June. I'm not going to say dates yet, just because it's not set in stone, but there will be probably three events that these riders will compete. There will be what we call a jackpot. So you pay $5 or $10 per event, and the winner of that event gets the sum of money. With that, we are hoping to also have what Friday Fling used to look like as far as food trucks, and maybe even local vendors, give them a space to provide to the community and hopefully make some money. But we are still working out those details. It looks like it's going to be actually Saturday afternoons instead of Fridays this year, just to work with the people who have the time and energy to volunteer. So keep an eye out for more details with that. Once we get our mitigation plan approved by the state, then we will put more information out.
Uh-huh.
We are also really focusing on revitalizing our community gardens. We have been for the last few years. They've been around since the 90s, early 90s. So that has been really exciting. This is the first year since we started the revitalizing where every bed is claimed and being used. And like we mentioned earlier, 4-H is getting involved and helping us build more beds. And we have hopes and dreams of one day maybe even having a community greenhouse. But that is also part of our mission, is to provide agriculture space for the community. So that's a really important focus right now.
So this isn't a joint project. I mean, I thought community gardens was part of the 4-H project. Is that, am I wrong?
So the Kodiak Soil Water Conservation District has the community gardens here in town, and then the Fair Board has the community gardens out at the fairgrounds. 4-H has beds here in the town gardens, so our gardening program, we pay for two of the beds, and our 4-H members use those beds, and same for out at the fairgrounds. We're just helping build some beds to use.
And from my understanding, there's a small group of families that live in the flats that this could, of 4-H families, that live out in the flats that could benefit from having some beds at the fairgrounds, just so they don't have to drive all the way into town to tend to their garden.
Yep.
So I'm excited.
It's interesting. There's such a resurgence in people wanting to garden, people wanting to bake, yes, people wanting to cook, because we're just in a different situation now. So this is where 4-H fits in so perfectly, to be able to support families in doing these things more, or learning how to do them in the first place.
One of our Walk and Talk Tuesdays is going to be out at the White's property, and they have strawberry fields. And she said that she's never seen a year like this of just, you know, desire for gardening and planting. And
you got a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And seeing those shelves empty, you go into Safeway, you know, and there's still empty shelves, and it makes you think, boy, I maybe should be growing more of my own food, or at least figuring out where I can get it in town.
So, Libby, you also mentioned that you're doing something with the villages.
Right. Kate was really instrumental in starting this with sending those kits out to the kids in the villages, the four villages, you said, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully maybe we'll be doing that with the potatoes too, right? With that potato in a bag. And
yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
We whenever we did that windowsill garden project, there was definitely interest from those communities to start 4-H out there as well. And so I feel like in the future we'll have some 4-H leaders out in, you know, Port Lions, Larson Bay, Yuzinki.
So what is it essentially? Just a little box you put on your windowsill and you give them the seeds to be able to grow things in there. Now, are you foreseeing that this whole whatever you're doing right now is getting memorialized, so that next year when you have a state fair, you've got, like, here's the pictures of last year's projects, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have a lot of really good photos coming in for a lot of these activities, but we still have yet to figure out how we're going to do this virtual fair. We want to do a virtual fair for the kids here, because that's part of the big push for our 4-H year, is it culminates at the fair, where kids can show off what they made, but also do their presentations. So 4-H is not only doing, but it's sharing, and kids are required to present on a topic that usually pertains to one of their projects. And
so is there any possibility for somebody that's growing the giant cabbage right now, you know, to, if we're not having a state fair, is there a way that those things can still be entered into the state competitions? Or, you know, you got the people with the photography and the...
Well, if they're a 4-H kid, yes. Anybody else, probably not right now. But for 4-Hers, yeah, we're working on something.
So you're
them.
So you're really actively going to try and still have this September celebration in some way?
Mm-hmm. And acknowledge their hard work, and I think so.
I think it would be pretty easy to socially distance, have a family drop off a project, and then we could display it in video. We're kind of brainstorming, but I think that it's important to have those kids be able to show off their work.
And the Fair Board is also trying to figure out a way to give that opportunity to the local public as well. It's not going to look like what our normal fair looks like, but like Kate just said, we're trying to figure out a way that they can bring their product that they want to enter to the fairgrounds, and we virtually share it with the community, not promising awards or anything, but if you want to show what you've been working hard on all year, I mean, a beautiful quilt or something, we are working on trying to figure out how we can make that happen. Yeah.
So I noticed that the races are happening like next weekend, right? Is it next weekend?
Yeah, I think so.
And you said that people have canceled weddings already, but I remember we've rented out the fairgrounds on a couple of occasions for concerts. Do you still see potentially that kind of thing happening out there during the summer?
There's talk of it. I know the Lions are still planning the Warm August Night.
They are.
But I don't know their details. And I will say, as the Fair Board representative here, we are taking the guidelines for large events very seriously. And they are intense to hold a community event. It's one thing to hold a private event. A wedding, you can... That's separate. You're not inviting the entire community. But when an event invites the community, it's really important to take these guidelines seriously. So that is one thing I want to make sure the community knows, that if there are any large events held on the fairgrounds this year, there's going to be mitigation plans, and we will be doing everything in our ability to make sure it's as safe as possible.
Well, you got some aspects. You're outside at the raceway. Yeah. You're outside. You have less to worry about, maybe. But if you're inside one of those closed little buildings, then you got more issues.
Yes, and the Warm August Nights is held outside. One of my concerns is mainly just we're volunteers, so I don't want to put my volunteers at risk. The Lions, I definitely support them, and I hope that they can figure out a way to make Warm August Nights happen, because I know it's an event the community really looks forward to. But I also care about their volunteers too. And but it's there. That's a food drive, and that's also really important for our community. But I don't know what their plans look like, but it might look a little different than normal. So
yeah. So do you do the horse classes? Right? Isn't the
four-H? Yeah, 4-H has horse and horse lovers. But right now, all activities are on hold. Even outdoor activities, and that's just something, you know, that we have the mandate from the university system, and we also have our own leaders. Decision that we're not going to participate in any events for the foreseeable future.
So all the summer activities are pretty much Zoom type classes, right? You're not other
than so far.
Than...
Yes, so far that's what we've done. Although I think we might be able to start moving into some things outside with limited number of people, but we're still feeling the way.
Feeling your way.
Yeah.
Well. Talk to me a little bit. Is 4-H's funding being impacted by this?
Yes, probably. I mean, it's a tight economic system for everybody. And the university has had this double whammy of having already had pressures put on them, or reductions, mandatory reductions from state funding from the government right now, and so it's worrisome, and it's tight, and it's all I can say is that this is Kodiak 4-H is a prime example of a small amount of outlay bringing in a huge amount of volunteer time, which adds up to a lot of dollars. So I think, did I share this already, the statistics here?
No.
All right, so we put together some statistics. So these were from 2018, but this is pretty typical. We had over 2,600 volunteer hours, and that's not counting the parents. There's a calculation you can do to figure out how much volunteer hours are worth. And so using that calculation, the Kodiak 4-H volunteer leaders have contributed over $66,000 worth of their time to the community, to the Kodiak community, in 2018. So that's pretty typical of the last few years. So it's a small, small investment in a big part of our community's, not just, you know, fun things for kids, but educational, very important educational things.
Well, it's a modest cost for the people that are involved to get their kids involved and their families involved in your kind of programs. It's pretty modest. Mm-hmm. And you're not really generating a lot of money, right?
No. We do have a number of fundraisers that we traditionally do throughout the year. Our pancake breakfast, Memorial Day pancake breakfast, pony rides and other things at the fair.
So you're out all those things now, though.
Yes. And then our harvest festival in October.
Oh, tell me that's not going to happen.
You're
talking about it already?
We are not talking about that yet.
We're not talking about that yet because it's overwhelming to think about that at this time.
We do rely heavily on Matson for a grant to provide the shipping for those pumpkins. And I know that they're kind of on hold right now unless it's supporting directly like food banks and that kind of thing for giving. Mm-hmm. So it would definitely be dependent on that because we
couldn't do it without their help.
No. Right? We have a lot of community partners. Maybe this is a good time to talk about them because we have so many helpers for us in this town. Matson is a huge one. Sutliff's, Cost Savers, Harborside Coffee. I'm trying to think of who else. Oh, the Elks! Boy, they're a big supporter of us. The school district, the Rookery. What are some of
the school district? Didn't you get involved? Wasn't there a gardening program or something that was in the school district this year?
Yeah, Ag in the Classroom.
In the Classroom.
So we decided to partner with there's an agriculture class that Mrs. Johnson does at the middle school, and so we worked with her and Tyler Cornelius at CANA, and we decided to do 4-H Tuesdays, where we were bringing agricultural topics into their ag class. I was basically the coordinator to find volunteers that would want to come in and teach the kids hands-on activities that had to do with ag. We were planning a lot of field trips out to the farmhouse pantry in the flats and the Baptist Mission, but unfortunately, those did not happen, but we were able to get in there for, I think, 2 months until the school stopped. But we're looking forward to continuing that partnership in the fall.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like we have a busy summer ahead of us, huh?
It actually feels really busy considering that there aren't any face-to-face meetings. Like, what is going on?
Do you feel like it's, like, busier now than before?
Everything takes twice as long, too, so it's, like, to get things done somehow. It's busy. But this is normal for 4-H. 4-H is a really happening organization. So if anybody wants to join 4-H, they can contact Kate through Facebook or at the website. And kids can still join, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
We do actually have, I think we had another five kids sign up just in the last week or two.
Well, and do you need people to help you out at the fairground?
I mean, excuse me. We always have some sort of project going on. We have a plan to really focus on revitalizing the actual property, our infrastructure. It's an ongoing plan, but yes, we could use volunteers. We're trying to redo our outdoor arena because that'll help us be able to hold an outdoor rodeo and other larger events. So that's going to be quite the project. The more volunteers, the better.
You're going to make the circle bigger?
No, so we have to redo the footing of the arena itself, but also the fencing.
The enclosed one, you mean?
No, the outdoor. The large outdoor arena where the pony rides take place. It really is a... could be a huge asset to the fairgrounds and to the community, because it's not just, it doesn't just have to be for horseback riding, but it could be used for other types of events as well. But just having a space outside would really open up opportunities.
What does it mean, the footing?
So the actual ground, sorry, I guess that's a horse term.
That's what the horses stand on.
Yeah, so it's actually the ground of the outdoor arena. We have put some money into maybe like a quarter of it, which has really helped. But the rest of it is really rocky, muddy.
Uneven.
Uneven. It's actually dangerous to ride in. So that is something that is going to... It's a large financial investment, but it would really help improve the facility for not only the horse boarders, but for future events.
So in other words, you have to go like bulldoze everything that's out of there, dig it all out, and then put new stuff on top?
I'm not a pro, but there's definitely a professional way to do it, which would be more involved like that. And depending on when we get our C3 funding
status,
then that could open up some funding to help us do it the right way. Also, we have some really great contracting companies in this town that have helped us in the past, and so we will be reaching out to them.
Let me ask you, are there independent, isn't there horse lessons? I mean, is there horse lessons out there and that kind of thing that's not part of 4-H?
Yeah, so we haven't in the past have had independent instructors. Teaching lessons. I'm not really sure what the plan with that is this year, but I know the Cottonwood Equestrian, they have a barn out on Cottonwood Drive, I think, out in the flats. Sylvia Kavanoff and Miranda Stoll, they, I believe, both teach riding lessons, and sometimes they use our facility, the fairgrounds, to do that.
You guys have a board seat open, too, right?
We do.
Are you looking for a new board member?
We do. Thank you, Libby. We are a 9-seat board, and so we actually have one vacant seat, and our next meeting is next Tuesday. It will be our first meeting at the fairgrounds since
So what's the last benefits year. Of what's the benefits of being on your board? You
feel good. you get to give back to the community. We really do have a lot of fun activities. Even our work parties can be fun. It's really nice to put some effort into a community facility and see the results. And for me personally, the work, the volunteer work, it can be challenging. But then when I see the community come out and enjoy it, it pays for it for me. So if you have that drive where you want to give back to the community and you enjoy animals or agriculture, outdoor type of work, then it can be a really fun group to be a part of.
So I'm gonna drop a little bombshell on you, okay? If your position didn't exist, would 4-H be able to exist?
So in the past, there has been a temporary vacancy of my position where it was between people who were there. So somebody resigned and then there was a break. And our 4-H volunteers stepped up and continued to run the program. They would work with the folks at the university to get the program to continue. If the position was completely cut, I assume it would look similar, where the leaders would need to work with somebody up at the state level in Fairbanks to continue to run the program, but that's not something that I could guarantee.
No, in fact, I would say it would look substantially different. I mean, all of us who are on the Leaders Council, you know, we all have really busy lives with full-time jobs and kids and a lot of other obligations and other groups that we're involved in. And, you know, we really love and appreciate 4-H and think it serves a really vital purpose in this community, but we can only do so much. And see, that's the beauty of having somebody who's actually, you know, for a few hours a week dedicated to organizing us. You know, an organizer. Yeah, herding cats. An organizer can bring us all together, and we can do so much. And that's what we've been doing for the last number of years. But without that position, it would be very hard to, we wouldn't be able to continue at this level.
Well, let me just ask you, if you had a paid position at the local level, but without the university association, could you continue to do what you're doing? No, you need the association with the university.
We need that association with the university as a land grant institution.
Okay, so how do we help save Kate?
That's a good question. I think reaching out directly to President Jim Johnson, as long as he's president of the U.S.
That's another
system.
Week or two, right?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's happening with that. Email, I would imagine, to saying, you know, we appreciate 4-H and Kodiak, or, you know, even comments on our Facebook page, I think, because then we could compile some of those and send them on. So, yeah, if you think Kodiak 4-H is an important part of the community, shoot us an email or say it on Facebook.
How many of you are there in the state?
I believe that there are 9 or 10 districts.
So you got,
and each district has, most of them have a full-time person. I think we are only one of maybe two that it's only a part-time. So we're already kind of operating at bare minimum, mm-hmm. I'd say.
So we're probably in like the food belt of the state, like Delta Junction and Wasilla, Palmer.
They have more staff, yeah.
Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll do what we can to help.
Right. So what I would say is, if you're interested in some of these, our Walk and Talk Tuesdays, that's a great way to learn a little bit more about what we do. So it'll be a live Facebook feed for our members on our Facebook group. And then we will be putting that recording on Friends of Kodiak, I think, right? So that people can watch who aren't part of 4-H yet.
Right. But so just to clarify, they could like our 4-H page now and be able to view it. It's not, as far as members, it's not a 4-H member. It's just a member of our group.
Yeah.
And so we're a private group just to protect our kids. But if you like our page and we approve that status, then you'll be able to see it live. Mm-hmm. But we will be posting it to Friends of Kodiak afterward, and it'll be available on our website.
Right. So then if you have something positive you want to say about 4-H, if you write it in the comments, then we can compile those and help argue for our cause.
That would be a great way to get the weekend started, wouldn't it? Just if somebody took 5 minutes out of their day now to wait to go to your website and put on something mm-hmm. positive.
Or to go to the Facebook page. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So is that next Tuesday, Kate, that we're having the first one?
Yep. We're starting on June 9th with Gayla Peterson.
That'll be a great one. So Gayla's going to do wild edibles on the beach, which pretty much everybody, I think, is interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, thank you guys. I appreciate it. You sounds like you've acquired some really mad skills in the last couple of months and doing new things. And you got some great ideas for where you're going. So I wish you the very best. I know, Sadie, just looking at you, you look like you're kind of tortured trying to figure out, like, as everybody is, trying to figure out the safest way to proceed and to reach the people that you want to reach. So it's really nice to see you doing all this hard work for our kids and for the community.
Yeah,
so thanks for coming in. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks. And thanks to KMXT for doing this.
You're welcome.
Thank you.